I am B, Emo Essien, and now you're tuned in to the ODU Monarchy Show.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Mike.
And you're listening to the Monarchist Basketball Show. All right, we haven't wrapped up the season yet, but that's what we're going to do tonight. And all the other things that we didn't get a chance to do this year because how busy it was. Coach Kieran Donahue on the show, and we are going to hit fun questions tonight as well, Kieran. Welcome back to the world's best and only ODU podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here as always. Thank you, guys.
Well, Coach, I want to first start this off by saying you never agreed to do this show. It just kind of got put in your lap, like a lot of things this season. And you kept your word, and you kind of just kept coming, and we really appreciate your willingness to keep doing the show, even though you didn't have to do the show, but you did it, and we really appreciate it.
Wait, I don't get paid extra for doing the show?
No.
Well, we could get you a tennis school monarchist t-shirt.
Thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure for me to do it. But again, that's the stuff that comes with the territory, right? I actually read just recently a blurb. I didn't read the whole article. A really interesting comments that Kirby Smart made about going from an assistant coach to a head coach. And he goes, "You think, but you don't really know." And he rattled off all these things. And he goes, "But until you sit in that chair," he's like, and one of the things he said was, he's like, "Yeah, as an assistant coach, you do a little bit of media every now and then." He goes, "But as a head coach, boy, oh boy." And I sat there and I read this. I'm like, I think I can relate to this just a little bit. But listen, this has been a pleasure. I'm happy to do it. Again, we are so lucky. We, ODU basketball, ODU athletics, we're so lucky to have you guys who are so passionate about this, who do such a great job, who are so respectful and appreciative of our athletes and our coaches who come at it with such a positive lens. We're so lucky to have you guys care so much that you volunteer your time and your efforts to make this happen. And again, as I've said before, we are so lucky to have the unbelievable fan base that we have. Again, it's just amazing. When I look back and see how many fans we had at those games here this year, despite our record, how into the games were, this is a special, special place. And whether I'm the assistant coach, the ops guy, or the sitting interim head coach, whatever it is, I have a tremendous appreciation for how lucky we are. And so this comes with the territory, but you guys have made this very easy. You've worked around my schedule numerous times. So listen, you don't need to thank me at all. I want to thank you guys.
Well, we really do appreciate that, Kieran. All right. So you kind of hinted at a good question here. So you've been an assistant coach the majority of your life, right? You finally had a chance to sit in that lead chair. What is the one thing that you're going to take from this experience and maybe put towards what did you learn this season being in that head chair that might make you better at your next job?
Yeah, I think I learned that you have to trust yourself. You have to trust your instincts. You have to work. You have to trust your staff. You have to delegate, right? You can't do it all yourself and you need good people around you, right? You got to have great coworkers and you got to let them go do their jobs, right? And I think that's, to be honest, a real strength of Jeff's that I benefited from. I used to say this to the players all the time that I thought being an assistant coach for Jeff was very similar to being a player for Jeff. He's on you pretty darn hard until you can prove to him that he can trust you, right? And once you cross over that threshold that you prove to him that you know what you're doing and you're going to do it and do it well, then he gives you a tremendous amount of latitude, right? And he does not micromanage. And I benefited from that, quite honestly, for years, right? And that expedited my development as an assistant coach, probably. And I think I realized that, right? I think you got to trust the people you work with. You got to trust your assistants. You got to let them go do their jobs. You can't do it all yourself. You can't try to do it all yourself. At the same time, you got to trust your instincts. I think that I made a good number of mistakes, probably, right? I've said this to you guys, I've said this to other people, right? The old adage in coaching, it's one seat over, but it's a world away. And that it's different, right? I had a good friend of mine tell that to me. He said, "Hey, you got to prepare yourself now. Being a head coach, it's insular. It's isolating at times, especially when it's not working great, right? Because you are, you're, it's on you, right? At the end of the day, it's you've got to make the big decisions in it. You're the one making a lot of the decisions. And sometimes people treat you a little differently because they're the head coach, right? Because they don't want to bother you, or they don't want to say the wrong thing around you, or whatever it is. So it can be a little insular. The other thing is, again, assistants make suggestions and head coaches make decisions. And those are two very different processes. You can say anything you want as an assistant coach. And if it works, that's great. If it's wrong, oh, my bad. But as a head coach, you make the wrong decision, it can cost you a lot. So I think trusting yourself, you know, you got to put in the work. You can't fake it. You got to be yourself. You got to do the job. That I can't be someone else. I'm not Jeff. I've worked for Jeff for a long time. I agree with a lot of what Jeff did. I agree with the values that our program has. But I don't agree with everything that Jeff did or decisions he made. But you got to trust him, right? And I had to trust him as an assistant coach. And then as a head coach, you got to trust yourself. And you got to keep working, right? I think one thing that I learned was you got to coach yourself also, right? And you got to find someone else to help you coach yourself, if that makes sense, right? And so, you know, Kevin Swan, Pastor Swan, who's a former ODU player that's involved with our program. I mean, golly, how unbelievably helpful was he to me? Tim Saha, our strength coach, right? Guys that are around our program but aren't coaches, right? And how helpful they were in just kind of asking me questions and making me think about things. And they were just looking out. They knew what I do. They knew what I was going through intimately, but they weren't coaches, right? They didn't have an angle. They weren't like, hey, we should be playing 2-3 zone. Hey, you should be playing this, right? Whatever. And how important that is to have people that can help you coach yourself, if that makes sense. I think the further removed I get from it, the more I'll look back and learn, right? I mean, I'm very, very fortunate I had this opportunity. A lot of guys are assistant coaches that never get a chance to be a head coach. I got a chance to be a head coach for 3 months. It's debatable whether I did well or not, but when I tried to embrace it, but it comes at you fast and furious now, right? And especially when you're struggling, and we were struggling. I would imagine it can be really, really amazing if you're really good. And it was still, parts of it were amazing, even despite the fact that we weren't good, right? When we did have success, when we had really good practice, when we obviously won a handful of games, when the guys just played really good basketball, that was really, really rewarding. Watching a guy like Danny Pounds bounce back, as we've talked about, right? Bounce back after hitting that freshman wall and really struggling, and then to come back and play. Bryce, right, finished a strong really well, season really well. Emo finished the season really well after sort of being up and down, right? Watching Jason Wade just pour everything he had into playing, especially, right, and knowing everything there. It's just really, really rewarding. I think that the highs are probably a little higher and the lows are definitely a little bit lower, but you can't allow yourself to get rocked too far one way or the other, right? You got to come in and you got to be ready, right? And you know, there ain't any off days, right? I think as an assistant coach, sometimes you can sort of hide a little bit, maybe, right? If it's your scout, for instance, if it's your scout, you got to be on, right, for the 2 or 3 days leading up to the game. The way we run our program, you have a big voice. You have a big voice with the program, so you got to be on. But if you're not the coach with the scout, then you can. You coach during practice, but there's a difference there, and maybe you can hide a little bit. You can't hide as the head coach, right? You got to be on everything, and every time you spoke to the team, you got to be all in. And this I think I learned from Jeff. I mean, I think Jeff had laser focused and was able to compartmentalize a lot. That was a learned process for me, especially given what I do normally for the program. I'm involved in this and this and this. Well. Yeah, and you have to shut some of that out, right? I learned I had to prepare for practice. I had to take the 10 minutes, 15 minutes before practice and make sure I wasn't trying to cram in any last phone call or text or something else about anything else. You gotta get ready. So yeah, anyway, I'm rambling. I apologize. It was a disappointing experience, you know, and obviously I wish I and we had done better. I think I'll look back on it for the rest of my life and I think there's plenty of lessons that I will take from it for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. And wherever the journey takes you, and I think we'll talk about that a little bit later, we know that you're going to be better because of all that. Now, the three of us, we've talked in the past about a number of different really interesting things that either we haven't been able to talk on the podcast or it wasn't on the podcast. But one of them was going over the scout and kind of a pregame meal. Can you talk to the fans about what that time with the team is with regards to what you guys do?
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do it. But every program is different, right? And we are a scouting-based program, right? We have been, right? We have a defensive focus for sure. And so scouting our opponents is something we spend a lot of time on and pride ourselves on doing well. So we divvy up amongst the staff, the scouts. And so an assistant coach will be in charge of scouting whoever it is, XYZ. And so that person, they got to get everything ready a few days before, right? So when the previous, they're working on it a week, 8 days, 9 days in advance when getting ready for that team and getting ready. And so then the day after our last game or the previous game, right, where the full attention of the coaching staff shifts to the next game. And so you got to have everything ready, right? The film and the scouting report and what your suggestions are. You got to know inside out and backwards what that team's going to do on offense, on defense, and then what you expect them to do against you. And then you got to be ready to talk matchups. Hey, I think Emo needs to be guarding this guy and Chauncey needs to be guarding that guy and why, right? And everything else. And when they go to this, we got to be ready to do that. And then let's say you got 2 days, right? Or 3 days, right? You got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday leading into a Thursday game. And then you got Friday practice and you got another game Saturday. Well, if you've got the Saturday scout, you got to be ready on Monday also, because sometimes we'll use that Monday. Over the years, we've done a little bit of everything, right? Tuesday and Wednesday are definitely geared for that Thursday game. That Monday scout or that Monday practice, half of what we do on Monday may be getting ready for the Saturday game, just because you're not going to have much practice time before that Saturday game. And the way it goes, right, with the travel stuff, Friday, it's hard to do a lot of work on Friday, the day after a game, right? So even if you do practice on Friday, it's going to be short. So you got to try to guard some or work against, guard or play offense against something, right? So if someone does something very different, right? If they're a pressing team, if they're a junk defense team, like Kermit Davis, Middle Tennessee, man, we were working on Monday for them if we were playing them Saturday. Tim Floyd at UTEP and all the different stuff he would do defensively, right? We were working Monday against them, or teams that did different things offensively, right? If the two games weren't going to be similar style, either offensively or defensively. So Monday's practice, if you had the Saturday scout, you still had to be ready on Monday, because we may need to spend half of Monday or a lot of Monday, the live stuff, getting ready for that Saturday game. Then Tuesday and Wednesday basically would be geared up for the Thursday game. And then Friday, man, it's a quick turn. And sometimes at Friday, we don't even really do much live practicing, right? You stretch, you shoot, and it's a sort of glorified walkthrough. And so every situation is different. And as a coach, you got to know what's really important. If you got 3 days to prepare for a team, you can guard more stuff live. You can play against more stuff. You can get into it. You only got 1 day, right? And you only got the player's attention, man. You got to be really good in film, but you also got to be really narrow, right? You only have maybe one or two film sessions. So you got to, and guys, after 8 or 9 minutes, man, their attention is shot, right? So you got to get the bread and butter in that 8 and 9 minutes. You got to get the point across. So then you go out to practice, and if you're the scout team, you got the scout team for us. It's the guys that aren't in the rotation. When you're teaching them how to play like the other team, you got 20 minutes, 25 minutes before practice, where you're teaching these guys how to run someone else's offense and how to run someone else's defense. And I think you guys have talked to players about that over the years and what an acquired skill that is for guys, right? Like I look at Cooper Jones, right? And he's done it now for 2 years and he's a pro, man. He's a pro. We can tell him, hey, we're getting ready to play JMU and he knows what to do already. Or we're getting ready to play Marshall and he's like, all right, we're going to run pistol this, right? But that's an acquired skill. And when you have guys that are really good at that, and we have a few, man, that makes practices so much better. And then when you're doing this stuff, you're leading the film sessions, right? So as an assistant coach, the head coach has a big voice, but as an assistant coach, if it's your scout, you have a big voice. You're talking the team through the film sessions, and then the head coach may be adding some things and pointing out some and highlighting specific things, but you're leading the show. And then the way we do things, the night before every game, whether we're in the hotel or we're at home, we have a meeting the night before. And that's sort of, it's a mixture of things. Part of it's curfew, right? So if we've got a Thursday night game, we'll meet as a team Wednesday. So we'll have practice Wednesday. Guys will go, and some guys may have a Wednesday night class. Some guys may go eat dinner, hang out, whatever it is. But we get together back as a team. Now, in the old days, we used to do that at like 10 o'clock at night. Now we've moved that up a little bit earlier. But we'll watch film a little bit more. But part of it is curfew. And we're reminding the guys, hey, tonight's an important night because we got a game tomorrow. Let's make good decisions tonight, right? And so if you get the team back together at 8 or 8:30 or 9 o'clock, that sort of breaks up their options. We shoot some free throws. We get in the gym, especially now that we have the Mitch with this unbelievable facility, get in there and shoot free throws. And it's just a relaxed way to get more free throw shooting up. It doesn't always pay dividends, but we try. And then game day, you got the game day shoot around. And again, we stretch, we shoot. And then you're the assistant coach and you're doing a walkthrough when you're walking through what the other team's going to do on offense, occasionally what they do defense, and you're pointing out, hey, this is what we want to look at. We got to guard this ball screen that way. We got to guard this screen across action this way. We got this funky situation that we haven't guarded much. Hey, we got to be ready. By the end of the year, most stuff that you're going to guard in a game, you've guarded multiple times, probably from different teams, and you sort of highlight that. You know, and then the head coach sort of adds extra notes or extra points of emphasis. Then we come in and we have a pregame meal, right? So if it's a home game, right, we're right there in the tent, and we're lucky enough, we go right into the building, stay in the building, go right in, and the great people at Aramark, and we have a meal, and we eat. Again, we eat to win, right? So it's some pasta and some chicken and some vegetables and usually potatoes, and the menu doesn't really deviate. Maybe the chicken's cooked a little differently. Maybe this pasta sauce is a little different, but it's a meal for a reason, right? We're eating to win. When we eat for 20 minutes or whatever it is, it's a buffet style. We eat similar on the road. And then again, we go through like the scouting report again, and the coach, and we'll have done this the night before. And then we go through it, and we've got a typed up scouting report and talk about, you know, each guy, right? And so it's, okay, Emo, you're starting on, you know, whoever it may be, right? And Chauncey, you're guarding Johnny, and Ty, you're guarding Bobby, and whatever it may be. When we talk about each guy and what they do well and what their strengths are and what they're looking to do on offense and how we want to guard them, right? This guy's really left-handed, or this guy can't shoot, so we can space him a little bit, or we got to be ready to double this big guy, or whatever it may be. And then we sort of give a brief overview again of like, hey, this is what they want to do, and this is what we got to do. And then sometimes those meetings are a little more rah-rah, right? You can't do the same meeting every time, so you got to pick and choose your spots when you spice it up a little bit. And then pregame meal, we wrap it up, and then we come back, guys leave for a few hours, if we're on the road, we go back to the hotel room, go to the game. You know, guys get in there, shoot, and then we go in the locker room, and we have a meeting in the locker room where we sort of go over again the matchups and what our opponent is going to do. And the assistant, again, is leading that. Then Jeff or I, when I was the head coach, then we would sort of address the team. And then they go back out and warm up for a little bit. Then we come back in one last time, like make sure guys have their jerseys on, make sure anyone needs to use the restroom, uses the restroom. We take a moment for each guy to, you know, go in their own way. And some guys pray and some guys don't, but we give everyone a moment to kind of do what they want to do in that regard. And then you kind of give them one last hurrah, whatever, win one for the Gipper, whatever you got, and try to get them excited and ready to play and go back out there. So there's a lot of moving pieces, and it's just a different sort of very well choreographed dance that those of us who are part of the team go through every year, and every team's probably different, but it's fun. It's a cool experience. It's a unique experience. And all, when you, again, you got whatever, 15 players and 5 or 6 or 7 coaches, and Tim Saha, our strength coach, is involved. Some of our managers are involved in all, you know, they're in the room. Jason Mitchell, our trainer's in the room for some of it. There's kind of that group, right? There's that core group of 20 to 25 people that are there that go through all that stuff together all the time. It's really a cool and special thing.
All right. So I think it'd be safe to say that this last season was a season of obstacles. You had 2 starters kicked off the team. You had Jeff's illness and retirement. And then you had, at the tournament, almost the whole team gets the stomach bug. The one obstacle I think that really stands out is Jeff's retirement happens in season and a replacement is hired. And you and your entire staff are now concerned about your future and livelihood while trying to also coach this team to finish the rest of the season. How did you keep these guys focused on those last couple of weeks as you're trying to just get to the end and win?
Yeah, I would say we weren't ever trying to just get to the end. And I know you didn't mean that in a bad way, but you know, I know I didn't look at it that way. And it was frustrating, right? And sometimes bad seasons, they're hard, right? And there's a lot of different, there's 2 different versions of losing sometimes, but we weren't trying to get to the end. But no, you're right. I think, listen, those of us that are in coaching, whether you've been in coaching for a year or two, or you've been in coaching for 26, 27, this is part of the business, and this is what you sign up for. And so you're always aware that you're one season away from potentially being out of a job. That's just the way it is, right? And sometimes as an assistant coach, you guys may have a great season, terrific year. And for whatever reason, the coach may want to make a change, right? So sometimes you see guys that are part of really good on the staff that are part of a really successful winning season, and they still sometimes get squeezed. But that's just, it's the nature of our business, unfortunately. As I like to say, man, it's a great job, but it can be a terrible business sometimes. And we all know this, right? And our families know this, right? This was really important to me before my wife and I got engaged. Like I probably waited an extra year, literally an extra year to get married, to get engaged, because I really wanted her to understand what she was getting herself into. And she had been a college athlete and she was certainly a big fan, but it's different. And the wives, the children, right? Of coaches, it ain't easy. And for them, it's even harder because it's not their choice to do this for a living, but it is. I think our guy, but I am extremely proud of our staff. Listen, right when Jeff had his heart attack, we all knew, oh boy, will Jeff be able to come back? What does this mean? Jeff was going into the season prior to that, right? Jeff was in the latter stages of his career anyway. But you can't dwell on that, right? You got to be all in when you're coaching. You really can't worry about what may happen or down. You just can't. You got to find a way to push that to the side. Again, you got to compartmentalize. You got to be in the moment. You got to coach your ass off. You got to help the players play their butts off. Excuse me. And you got to just try to stay in the moment. But yeah, this one had some extra challenges, right? For sure. I mean, obviously we weren't being successful. Jeff was ill. We knew there was a lot of factors with Jeff's health, and then Jeff made the decision to retire. And listen, Jamal and I have known Jeff for a really, really long time, 30 years, right? Jamal played for him. Drew played for him. I've worked for him for a very long time. Crisco's worked for him for 11 years. There's a lot of history with our staff and Jeff beyond just working together, right? That's a lot of years. And so we all wanted what was best for him, and we all understood that the decision he made was the right decision for him, 100%, right? And it was the right decision for him and his family and his health and his future. But we also understood the day that he told us that, and we all knew it probably could be coming, but with the day he told us that, the night before he retired, that there were six guys there that also knew, hey boy, we may be getting retired also. But that's the nature of it. But you can't dwell on it. I know I didn't. I tried to push the staff. And again, I think our guys did a great job. I mean, these guys worked their butts off. And whatever they were thinking when they went home, whatever they were thinking on the drive into work, it didn't affect our performance. It didn't affect the work that they did. At no point can I look at any of these guys and say, man, he wasn't all in, or he was worrying about something else, or he was trying to get something. Hey, these guys were fully invested in these players, fully invested in each other, fully invested in me, fully invested in the program, the team. And so that's all you can ask. And it was a weird situation, right? Sometimes the decisions that get made, and I think the decisions that were made, right? The university and the department moved very fast to hire Jeff's replacement. And Mike's a great guy. I'm sure he's going to be super successful. I know he's a monarch and he's very passionate about this school and this basketball program. And so all of us are really excited about Mike. He's the right person. He's one of us, right? That's an expression we've heard a lot going forward. But man, the immediacy with which he was hired, that added another layer for our guys and for our players and for our staff. Now, maybe for the players, it was a good thing, right? Maybe it removed some of the uncertainty. For some of the players, I think that was a good thing, right? It removed the uncertainty. For others, it was maybe a challenge. For all of us, though, it was another thing that we had to deal with, right? I mean, we have a big win over Marshall. It's a blur, I think, over Marshall. And then we had a win. And then Jeff, the next day, Jeff would come in. Sunday's off. Monday morning, Jeff's telling the team. And then we got to practice that afternoon. Then we got a game on Wednesday against App State, the best team in the league, right? And if they clinch that game, boy, they win the regular season title. And whew, did we run into a buzzsaw there? Then you got to travel, and then we're getting ready to go to practice on Thursday, and word starts seeping out that ODU had hired Mike Jones, and so I got to tell the players, hey, listen, this is another thing, and it's just a lot for them to process, right? It was a lot for all of us to process. Again, our players handled it really, really well. And then you get back from the Georgia Southern game where we obviously didn't play very well. You bus back through the night; it's a long 8-hour bus trip. You get back, and Coach Mike Jones is there, which was awesome of him, right? Waiting to meet all the players in person, the first opportunity to get. I thought that spoke so highly about his priorities, about his class. It was an unbelievable gesture, right? He waited for them, and he didn't talk to them long, but he talked to them, and it was impressive. But it's a lot for 18 to 20-year-olds to process. It's a lot for old men to process. And then, yeah, so, but again, our guys handled it really well. I don't really think I had to motivate our players or our coaches to get ready to play or to compete. You know, I think everyone handled it as probably as well as they could have.
All right, Coach. So Head coach retires. Six guys in flux. Talk to us a little bit about what's the road ahead for Coach Kieran Donahue.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of that is still to be determined. I anticipate that I will be staying here at OD, working in the athletic department. I am staying right now, right? I'm in work today. I was in my office today. I'll be in my office today. For right now, I'm helping Mike Jones transition, right? It's a big jump to becoming a first-time head coach. There's a lot of moving pieces. He's here in Norfolk. He's working the phones. There's just so much. Year one is, whew, and I've been through it twice, right? A new coaching staff year one, right? As an assistant, I've been through it at American U. I was here at Old Dominion 11 years ago. Year one is, it's always a lot of work, but year one is a tremendous amount of work. And Mike knows the university, he knows the landscape, he knows a lot of the people here at the university, but it's very different when you're working in it. So I think I've got a fair amount of institutional knowledge that stems from the job that I did for the last 11 years, right? Being the ops guy or whatever my title was. And so I'm here just helping Coach Mike Jones transition and helping him in any way he can. I told that to Dr. Selig, and I said it to Mike. Whatever my future holds. But regardless of that, I want what's best for this program, right? I've spent 11 years of my life here with ODU and with ODU basketball. My children were raised here as part of the program, right? My kids are in the gym. My daughter was in the practice gym yesterday because they didn't know school. She's in there shooting hoops. This is a place that I care deeply about. This is a program and a community and a university that has been tremendously supportive and embracing of my family and I for 11 years. I mean, I was blown away 11 years ago when we got here. I remember walking down the grocery store the first week I was here, and I was in the grocery store, and someone came up to me and was like, "Hey, coach, welcome. Congrats. We're excited. You're going to do great." And I walked away, and I was like, and then I turned back and said, "Excuse me." I said, "Thank you. It's great. I'm happy to be here." And then I walked away, and I turned and said, "Excuse me. How do you know who I am?" And she looked, she goes, "Oh, there was an article about you in the paper." And I was like, "What? I'm the ops guy. What? There's an article about me in the paper joining the staff." And I was like, "Okay." But fast forward 11 years, and I was in the grocery store on Saturday, and I'm walking through, and I got the milk in one hand and the eggs in the other. And I walked by a gentleman with it, who's, I would guess, was in his late 60s with an ODU hat on and an ODU sweatshirt. And I'm fairly certain I've never met this person. And I've met a lot of them here in 11 years in Norfolk. And as we're walking by, and he goes, "Hey, coach, just want to really thank you for everything you did this year. I know you did everything, and we didn't get the results we wanted, but you handled it, blah, 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 blah." And he was very complimentary to me. And I just stopped. I said, "Thank you, sir. I really appreciate you saying that. Thanks for being a fan." Again, That's two grocery store stories. And I would have understood if he threw eggs at me this past Saturday. But you know, this community, this university, they've taken great care of us, and my wife and I, and this has become home for us. It's where we've raised our daughters. Right, our oldest daughter was 4 when she came here. The younger daughter was 6 months when we physically moved. And this place is special to me. And I feel very strongly that I have poured a lot of myself and a lot of my family's poured a lot of ourselves into ODU, ODU basketball. And so if I'm not part of that going forward, that's okay. But I definitely want what's best for ODU, and I want what's best for ODU basketball. I want what's best for the players in the program. And so whatever I can do in the meantime to help Mike get up and running. And I know Mike a little bit. I don't know him well, but you know, I've known him for a few years, and I'm excited about him. I'm excited about the future of the program. So whatever I can do to help him until he gets his staff up in place. We had a conversation the other day, and he said to me, he said, "Hey, even after I get everyone in place," he's like, can we still, we may need to pick your brain. And then I said to him, "Hey, listen, man, if I'm working across campus in another building here at the university, or if I'm working 1,000 miles away, or if I'm working in some other capacity here in Norfolk, you guys can always pick up the phone and call me. Again, I want what's best for the program. And so I'm going to try to do that. So I'm not exactly sure what my future holds. I'm obviously dodging your question a little bit. At least for the short term, I will be staying here in the athletic department. And right now, my responsibility or my role is to just help Coach Jones, and then whenever he onboards his assistants, get those guys up and running and help in any way he can. But again, we got to take 7 days off next week. I'm sure our guys will jump back in and start lifting and at some point, Coach Jones may jump back on the floor and start working out with guys. So again, whatever they need of me, I'm happy to do. But I am optimistic that I will be remaining here in Norfolk and remaining as part of the ODU community. And I am very, very, very appreciative that I'll have that opportunity to do so.
Well, this episode of the Monarchist Podcast is brought to you by the Pride of ODU Collective. Their mission is to elevate the experience of student athletes through name, image, and likeness, while also elevating the fan experience. If you or your business are interested in getting involved, you can reach out to us directly or go over to theprideofodu.com. That is theprideofodu.com. Thank you for listening, and go Monarchs. We hope you are a Monarch a long time into the future, but we promised you some planes, trains, and automobiles questions.
Yes.
And one part of hiring a new staff, there's a lot of discussions about who the new assistants are going to be. But another big discussion I've noticed lately is the future schedule. Now, I know you can't talk about the staff, but how much of that schedule for next season is complete and how much is like left open?
No, I think a good bit of it is complete, but there's also some work to do. And the hard part, the work that needs to be done, is the tricky part. So we've got we're in a tournament again next year. We're scheduled to play down in the Caymans, which was an event we played in, I guess, 5 years ago. It's a great tournament, great location, good competition. So we'll be playing next year in the Cayman Classic or Cayman Islands, whatever it's called, in the tournament in the Caymans. So we'll have 3 games in 3 days. That's the week of Thanksgiving, I believe. But then obviously we have some games, right? We'll continue to play William & Mary. We have to go to Radford, right? They came to us this year. We have to return that game. Northeastern comes to us. We have two other home games that we think are set in stone. Well, they're pretty close to being set in stone, but they're not set in stone. So two more home games. And then there's a third home game that we're trying to, you know, finalize right now. And then we got to pick up 2 road games, probably two. And so some of that that's a lot that I'm working on. Coach Mike Jones is working on that. I'm continuing to work on that and just working the phones, making calls. Scheduling is interesting. Scheduling has sort of been pushed back at a lot of, again, things are different than a few years ago. Some of this was done during the year, but it seems like a lot of people right now don't want to worry about scheduling until the spring. I don't know if that's because they're not sure who their roster will be or who your roster will be. I think coaches overthink this sometimes, right? And especially now in the portal, man, everyone's roster is changing. But there's some work to be done. But I would say that our schedule is probably 2/3 set for next year. But there's a couple games that we still have to finalize and are working to do so now. But I'm pretty confident we'll have another very, very good and challenging
season. Mike, I know we always have tons of logistics questions. Do you have any more that we want to get in tonight before we move to the fun stuff?
I'm going to leave this as an open-ended for Kieran. Is there a logistics thing that you dealt with this season that was just a nightmare to deal with?
All right. So fun story. No, fun story. And this ties to the season-ending wrap-up, right? So we had a tough decision to make. I had a tough decision to make. So the way that the good conference schedule fell, right? We had Wednesday at App State. We had Friday at Georgia Southern. Okay? And then the conference tournament starts on Tuesday. So we wait as long as we can before we figure out what flight we're going to buy on, right? A year ago, we flew on Tuesday because we knew we weren't playing on Tuesday, right? So 6 weeks out, we were like, we're not going to play. We're like, well, this year, about 5 weeks out, 6 weeks out, whatever it may have been, you're looking, you're going, shoot, we're trending towards that 11 to 14. We're trending to being a Tuesday team. Right. And so you can wait till the very last minute to buy plane tickets. But when you got to get 27 or more people, right, conference tournament, there's fewer, you got to get 27 people on a plane and it's a connection. You can't wait too long. You may not get all those seats. Right. And then you're also trying to be budget conscious. Right. So we're looking at it going, okay, all right, conference tournament. We may be playing on Tuesday. So we got to be there. We have to be there Wednesday. And then you're looking at it and you're going, okay, we play Wednesday at App State. So you leave Tuesday, you practice Tuesday at ODU, you bus to App State, six and a half hours because the mountain slows you down a little bit, right? And then we had fog, so that slowed us down even more. You play at App State. After the game, we bus the 5 and change over to Georgia Southern, get in at 2 in the morning, 2:15 in the morning, You got to practice on Thursday. You're in Statesboro all day Thursday. You play Friday night, 7 o'clock. Means you're pulling out of there at 9:45 at the earliest. And it's an 8-hour ride, right? So you're getting back to campus 5:30, 6 a.m. So we're having the debate. Okay, what do we do here? Do we just treat us like the baseball team, right? And some of the guys, Ted Alexander's been on the bus with baseball. Jason Mitchell's been on the bus with baseball. And I'm talking to these guys a few weeks back, talking to the coaches, I'm talking to Saha, right? The guys that travel with us, they know. And I'm like, all right, do we just baseball it, man? Do we just go Tuesday to App, 10 to Georgia Southern, and then wake up Saturday and just cruise on over to Pensacola, right? At that point, do we just bus to Pensacola? Do we fly to Pensacola? But then you're looking and you're like, okay, that's going to be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Now you're playing the first tournament game on day 8 of a road trip, right? So you've got 2 road games, and then day 8 of a road trip, whew, is that going to put us in position to be successful? Now with from year to year, that could be a very different answer, right? With this year's team, ultimately, I made the decision. I was like, I don't think that's the best idea for this team, right? I thought that would be too much. And we would need – so I was like, okay, we're going to come back and clear our heads. So we choose to bus back, get back to campus Saturday, 6 a.m., but at least then the guys can roll home. It's the start of spring break. They can roll back. They can lay in bed all day Saturday. They got Saturday off. Sunday we'll get together. We'll practice a little bit Sunday, watch film, do a little bit of practice, get the stuff out, but we're going to practice on Sunday, turn around. Now, do we turn around and fly Sunday to Pensacola? Well, gosh, you just bust back. You only had one night in your own bed, and then you're going to go to Pensacola. Not sure that's a great idea either. So, okay, no, we'll do what we always do for road games, right? We always practice at ODU by and large and travel the day before road games, and we have no issues. So that's what we're going to do for the tournament. Plus, we've gone down 2 days in advance the last number of years, and that hasn't really worked out for us, right? Whether we were whatever seed we were at. So I was like, you know what? We're gonna go down the day before. We're gonna treat like we'll practice. We're gonna right. So everything's great. We get back from. We have the 2 days at home. Practice Tuesday. Practice Monday. We go to the airport Monday afternoon, and we're sitting there waiting to fly. We got to fly to Charlotte, then Charlotte to Pensacola. We're supposed to get in around 7:30 at night. Leaves us plenty of time in case there's a little in case you get there. Well, we're sitting there, and the flight to Charlotte just keeps getting delayed and delayed. And then I'm looking at it, and then I'm like, I hear, oh, mechanical issues because our plane hadn't left Charlotte. So I get on the phone right away with Samantha Mitchell, who's our in-house travel agent, who's unbelievable at her job. Fabulous. She used to be the ops person at both JMU women's basketball, don't hate her, and then at Virginia Tech, right? And so she knows how teams work, right? And now she's kind of the in-house travel agent for ODU Athletics. She's unbelievable at her job. So I'm on the phone with her. She's looking. She goes, Kieran, it's a mechanical issue with your plane. It's not even let. The plane's supposed to come to Charlotte, get us to go back. And I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to miss our connection to Pensacola. We're going to get stranded in Charlotte for the night. And then we're going to have to fly Tuesday morning, right? Best case scenario, we're going to have to fly to Pensacola on the day of the game. Now, luckily, we didn't play till 7:30 at night. So I said, Sam, if there's anything you can do. So she works her magic. She calls me right back 5 minutes later. She goes, all right, we can get you on a different flight. Luckily, there's 20, at least we needed 27 seats. She's like, there's 27 seats available. You can get on a Southwest flight and go Southwest to Nashville, Nashville to Pensacola. You're going to get in a little bit later. You're going to get in at 9:30, but at least you're getting in. And that has no, appears to have no delays. So I'm like, okay, we're on it. But I do. I mean, I'm sitting there in the airport going, man, this is just a fitting way for this season, right? And I remember I had the conversation with Ken Brown where I called him and I said, Ken, I think we're thinking we're going to travel on Monday. I know that's not what we usually do for the tournament. I was like, but I think it's what's best for our team. And he's like, well, you guys do it all the time. I don't think it's a big deal. And I was like, yeah, but you know, if you don't show up for a regular season game because of travel issues, you may just have to play it the next day. You can't just play the tournament game the next day, man. So I'm sitting there going, oh my goodness, did I make the world's biggest mistake of all time, right? Like whatever. But luckily we were able to. So we get up to the counter. I tell the guy at the counter, hey, we're going to bail. We go down. People at American Airlines are great. They pull all of our luggage out of the back. We pick up all of our luggage. We go around to the other counter, check in for our Southwest flight, fly to Nashville, fly to get in Pensacola. Now, get in at 10 o'clock at night. It's a long day because there's been a long, just kind of waiting around in airport stinks. But again, 10 o'clock is not too late for our players or any of us. But you're like, okay, man, we got it. Whew, we're good. Come down to breakfast. We get some food for the guys. The hotel wouldn't hold our dinner 2.5 hours late for us, which was unfortunate, but I get it. So we got some other food for our guys. We figured it out. Chris Talagani did a great job. I come down to breakfast now Tuesday morning, day of the game. I walk downstairs, and Jason Mitchell, our athletic trainer, sitting there, and he looks at me and he goes, oh, I was just texting you. And I went, that can't be good. And he goes, no, it's not. We got X amount of guys not feeling well. We got two guys really, really sick, stomach bug. And in the next 20 minutes, two guys went from two guys to seven guys like that as they all sort of called in or streamed in. So we're sitting there and like, okay, what are we going to do? Now we got game of the year. I'm sitting there going, okay, we got seven guys. All three of our centers are sick. If none of these guys can play, we're going to have to play a ton of zone. We only got five guys. We can't get in foul trouble, which is ironic because we end up getting a ton of foul trouble. We're sitting there. We actually had to send guys, four of the guys that played in some of the major minutes, right? We had to send them to get IVs. So even right to the very last minute, right, the logistics. And again, Chris Talagani was knee-deep in a lot of it, but Chris did a great job. Jason did a great job. Samantha Mitchell did a great job. But right there, right, even this season, as challenging as it was, and we had a lot of challenges right down to the wire. So when you get a trip that runs smoothly, you almost take it for granted because sometimes they just don't.
That's one heck of a way to end a turbulent season or a turbulent travel to end the season. But
and again, give our players a ton of credit, right? Despite all of that, despite four of the guys that played significant minutes and three of them played major minutes in that game, despite all of that, despite the season, again, our guys, right, they battled. They battled and they competed. And if only the game was half a second longer, right, 0.5 seconds longer or whatever it is, we're having a very different conversation, or at least a slightly different conversation. But our guys, I think that's what we saw from our players all year long, right? So I know this is the season recap. Also, again, I couldn't be prouder of them, right? They battled, they competed. It wasn't always pretty. We obviously didn't get the results we wanted. But, man, these guys never quit. And given everything that they'd been through all year long, in the last week, in the last 24 hours heading into that Texas State game, our kids were ready to play and ready to compete and they played as hard as they could. And that's it. We can want more, but that's all we can ask for.
Well, on that note, Mike, Coach, you ready for some fun questions? I know you were getting asked about this earlier today.
Bring it on. Hopefully I've got equally fun answers.
All right, Coach, here we go. Fun questions. First one should be an easy one. Favorite restaurant in Norfolk?
Oh, well, D Egg Diner. And again, my guy, Phil Decker, who formerly owned it. I don't know that I have a more satisfying meal than I ever do when I get the French toast and bacon and the old school and at D Egg Diner. And over the break, over some semester break, right around the holidays, and the dining hall's closed, we have to give our guys meal money, right? But we often take our players to Dieg right here on Hampton Boulevard, Dieg West, in those mornings. So get the guys up, get them a really good meal and a team building and camaraderie, and they hang out in there and it's fun. I remember one of the worst days I had was when I walked into Dieg and the young lady who was the manager looked at me and said, Coach, I'm sorry, but the milkshake machine broke. And it was like such a crusher, boy, because man, would I have a, I would absolutely get a chocolate milkshake with my French toast and my old school breakfast. So that's my gut reaction for a lot of reasons, because I think the food's fabulous and it's very Norfolk, and you see a great cross section of Norfolk in there. And again, they have for 11 years. And I think they were doing that with the basketball team before we got here. They take really, really good care of our team when we don't have many options for food. And so again, What an amazing community we have here.
I will say your choice rubbed off on one of your players. I believe it was Leroy Odiai that said Dieg West was his favorite restaurant. So
I think you're right.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of great restaurants. My wife and I don't go out a ton. And again, I P. Franks, right? ODU fans know P. Franks. I look at P. Franks and I have a really special place in my heart for them. I love walking by before the games and just seeing the crowd of people in there getting their dogs or their burgers or their buckets. I think there's a great group of people that go in there. I know my dad, when my dad's in town, man, my dad loves going in there right? And getting a bite to eat, and it's 2 hours before the game, and the people are, the fans are streaming in there, and then rolling right into the Chartway again. I mean, what a just amazing situation, right? Again, another example of how lucky we are. But I think that whether we go in there for lunch, which we do because our office is directly across the street, but again, we're just so cool to go in there, and you got a cross section of students, university employees, townsfolk, alumni, whether it's 11, you know, or 12 o'clock or 6 o'clock. Yeah, I just think those are special places.
Well, Coach, before moving on to the next question, I will tell you, just like the Tun Tavern was the birthplace of the United States Marine Corps, P. Franks was the birthplace of this podcast. It was Mike, myself, and Coach Jones sat down and had lunch. And that's where I learned that P. Franks has a Caesar salad, because that's what Coach Jones gets at P. Franks.
It's what he gets now.
Yeah.
in recent years. There may have been a couple double dog, I mean, chili on the side. I'm trying to think. I don't know their menu
back
as well
in
as
the day.
Should. But back in the day, no. Yeah, that is. I can't tell you the number of people that have told me. They say, hey, I saw Coach Jones and P. Franks. And I said, really? Yeah. Over the last 11, well, certainly over the last 7 years. Yeah. I think it's 7 years now we've been in the Mitchum Basketball Performance Center. I think we just finished season 7. It's just right there, man. It's right across
the
street.
Super, it's super convenient. We definitely are big fans. All right. If the three of us were going to sit down for have a beer and watch a hoops movie, what's that favorite basketball movie going to be for you, Coach?
Oh, wow. A lot of people would say Hoosiers. Some people would say For Love and Basketball. Oh, man, my favorite. And I am a movie guy. I mean, Chris Kavinsky and I talk about it all the time. But I'm not a big re-watcher of movies. So a good friend of mine who comes to every game as an ODU alum, the earliest, my first really close friend here in Norfolk, who we've been friends with for 11 years and sits with my wife. He and his wife sit with my wife at every game. And he's a podcast guy, right? He listens to you. He listens to a lot of stuff. He's tried to get me for years to listen to some podcast. I think it's called The Rewatchables, talking about breaking down movies. But I'm not a guy that really likes watching movies I've seen. I very rarely do that. I would guess I would have to say Hoosiers, probably, because I feel like that's, I mean, I know it's a, but you know, I watch a lot of other basketball movies and I just sort of, I sort of cringe sometimes, but yeah, no, for me, it would be Hoosiers for sure. Right. You don't get caught watching the paint dry, right. Or whatever it is, and the picket fence. But for me, if I'm going to sit down with the two of you guys, I think the three of us would be better suited watching Hoosiers than we would be watching For Love and Basketball. You got to play to your crowd.
Yeah,
also.
I would agree with that statement.
Yeah. I mean, Blue Chips is fine. Jesus Shuttleworth movie, yeah, it's fine. I mean, but I don't feel the need to watch those again. The Basketball Diaries isn't really a basketball movie, although that was set not that far from where I grew up.
Coach Carter? What about Coach Carter?
Yeah, I know I've seen it. I'd rather watch – I'd rather lean on me with Joe Carter, right? You smoke crack, don't you? Well, jump then. Sorry. I'd rather watch that, to be honest. Basketball movies, eh. Listen, I'm not going to lie. My wife and I have, you find some shows and you try to squeeze it in an hour. And there's a lot of shows that I like to watch that my wife isn't super into. So I'll watch the show she's want to watch, right? So I've seen the Gilmore Girls. I started off reluctantly watching the Gilmore Girls. It got sucked in. But at one point in time, we were at One Tree Hill, I think. And I was watching that. And I didn't even realize basketball was a theme throughout that show. And it's not very good, but that's okay. Yeah, I think with a lot of the basketball stuff, I'm just so Hoosiers is awesome. The rest of them, I'm trying to think. What other Coach Carter? Yeah, right. That's good, but eh. The UTEP movie or Texas Western movie, right? I thought that was fabulous. Glory Road, I guess that is.
Yeah.
Good thing this isn't a lightning round because I talk so darn much.
So you mentioned your friend that sits with your wife at games. We got to meet him a month ago at one of the games. And he's wearing a Grateful Dead hat, I believe. I mentioned I like the hat. We end up talking about jam bands. And then we talk about our connection to you. And he let us know that you liked fish a lot. So we always ask this question. Dream concert, band, and location. Like venue and band. So I'd love to hear what that is for you at this point in your life.
Well, at this point in my life, so the concert that I would, you know, and I've seen them a bunch, and I was formerly a big Fish guy. Can't tell you how many times I've seen them. And I listen to Fish now some, but not really very much anymore. Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band is a group I've seen. I would have loved to have seen Bruce Springsteen on Broadway I watched it on Netflix. It was awesome, but it's not the same. I would have loved to have seen that and listen to him tell stories and hear him play in a small environment, in acoustic. I know people that have went to see Bruce Springsteen however many years ago at the TED at the time who didn't think it was a great show because they expected the whole Bruce Springsteen E Street Band show, and it was sort of a more acoustic. But that's right up my alley. I'm all for that. I will tell you that I was texting with a gentleman that's employed at a school in Richmond that we're not allowed to name. And I jokingly said, darn, I didn't even realize this. Like, Springsteen and the E Street Band are going back on tour. They were on tour last spring and summer and fall. I didn't realize they were coming back, and they had to stop because he got sick. And they got a whole nother tour. And like, their second date is Friday night of the first round of the basketball tournament in Vegas. Now, I am a huge NCAA tournament fan, right? Basketball Thursday and Basketball Friday, as my friends know, is a big holiday in the dining hall. If we're not lucky enough to be playing on those days, we're definitely watching. And this goes back to, all those years at American U, Jeff and our staff, we would go to lunch on Thursday at noon, watch the games, and then just kind of do it again Friday and whatever. And now the Donahue's, we host a lot of people, our friends, on Basketball Thursday and Basketball Friday. So for me right now, if I won Powerball tomorrow, I would be, since we're not playing, I would be very, very, very tempted to jump on a plane to Vegas to watch basketball. And I'm a non-gambler. I have no interest in gambling. I don't bet on horse. I could care. But I was out in Vegas one time for the first round of the NCAA tournament. And I was out there recruiting. It also worked out really well because a friend of mine's bachelor party was out there. So I was able to sort of double dip. And just being in there and watching all the games and the crowd, and you care so much about the upsets, but all those people that care so much about the spread. And I know we're not supposed to talk about this, but it was just a whole different, Vegas. And I know that that's a trip that a lot of people make, right? There's groups of friends that go out to Vegas for the first round of the NCAA tournament. But I do think right now, man, going out there for Basketball Thursday and Friday and then capping it off with Springsteen out in Vegas, that I would sign me up for that. And I've seen Springsteen and the E Street Band a bunch of times. I was actually pretty sure I'll buy tickets here very soon for them at Nats Park in early September on a weekend. But that would be the one for me. I will also tell you that I'm very excited. One of the really cool things about the Final Four, and all the coaches go to the Final Four every year, or most coaches do, and it's the coaches' convention as well. But the Final Four, right, they always have concerts, free concerts in a park nearby. And so I've gone over the years, actually saw Springsteen there. Chris Kavinsky was supposed to come with me. It was in Dallas. It was a rainy day. We had late night meetings the night before, and I was trying to wake up Crisco and Brian Gilmore, who was on our staff. And I was like, guys, let's go, man. Dad, let's go. I'm going to see Springsteen. He's on. And Crisco was like, I'll meet you there. And he never rallied to get there, and he missed out. And at that, the weather wasn't that great. Oh, yeah. And I've seen some other really good shows. But, you know, my daughter, who's a big fan, is going to be coming with me to the Final Four. This year is kind of a birthday treat for her. And we'll go to the games, and I'll take care of the convention stuff. And she's old enough, she can hang on her own. But I'll go to my meetings and do some other stuff. But we'll go to the games. We'll be fans. But they have the big concert. She told me the other day, she goes, Dad, she's like, oh, yeah, the concert's just got – the lineup for the concert's just got released. And I said, great. Is it anyone good? And she goes, no. And she goes, well, the Jonas Brothers, but they're playing on Saturday, and we'll be at the games on Saturday. I said, yeah, I mean, I'm not really the Jonas Brothers. Sure. I'm not dying to see them. And then I said, but who's on Sunday? And she goes, I don't know. I don't know who any of these people are. She goes, wait, Mom said you'd be really excited. And she looked it up on her phone and she goes, Leon Bridges. I was like, oh, hell yeah, man. Like, let's go. Leon Bridges is the concert on Sunday at the Final Four. And she goes, yeah. And I was like, heck yeah, man, sign me up. I'm all in for that. And she goes, wait, I think he's the first act. And she goes, it's Leon Bridges, Nathaniel Rateliff, the Black Keys, and Mumford and Sons. And so that's the Sunday at the Final Four. And I literally almost drove the car off the road. And I was like, Miles, that's our Sunday right there. And she goes, I don't even know who any of them are. I said, you will after that night. So I mean, I would go see any one of those four, certainly for free. I'd go see any one of those four, but to have all four of them, I'm getting a little bit older. I'm not sure I have the stamina though to sit through four acts, but I'll be there for some of them for sure. And Leon Bridges, 2:00 on Sunday, I've got it bookmarked. I'll be there.
Well, Coach, you know those things aren't free because you've got to get there at the butt crack of dawn.
Yeah, it's actually not that bad. I've been to a lot of them. Usually they're in a big open space. It works. We figure it out. But no, it's you make it work. I don't think it'll be that bad.
I'm hoping for you that Krongbin shows up to play with Leon Bridges. I don't know if you know who.
Who's that?
Krongbin? They're a Texas band.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
A Texas band that released a song with Leon. I think it was last summer or the year before, called Texas Sun.
Oh, yeah. Great tune. So that's the band that's on that with him. Yeah, yeah. He's always playing with different folks. Oh, yeah. No. I'm on board.
Yeah, you need to look up that band and listen to their own stuff because they're fantastic.
Now I've got an assignment tonight.
All right, Aaron.
My homework.
All right.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for live music. I think for me, going and watching a Phish show back in the day or a Springsteen show, especially those bands that don't just kind of come out and play their quick hour and 30 set list and keep it moving, right? Those bands that are, and some of them are jam bands, but Springsteen's not a jam band, right? I always equate it to watching a really good team play basketball, right? And if you know a band well enough, right, and just kind of some guys have good shows and good nights and the others, but they just kind of, they all, however it is that a band like that that can just come together, it's teamwork, right? It's teamwork. And I appreciate great teamwork. So when a band can come together and be something greater when they're all together than they would be by themselves, man, I just really have a great appreciation for that. And I think that ties to I feel about watching really good basketball be played.
All right, Coach. So just like, you know, you couldn't get away from this question your daughter asking you, you can't get away from these dangerous animals. So I'm going to ask you the same question that we ask a lot of your players. What do you feel the most dangerous animal, not to be killed by, but to be eaten by?
Yeah, so my gut reaction would be a shark, right? Because I think, and I love the ocean, I love the beach. Right. I wish I was a better surfer. I can't surf a lick. I wish I boogie boarded as a kid. I wish I had surfed more. But man, I think if you're out there in the water and you're there and then something comes up from that where you can't see it coming from underneath and oh boy, that would, oh yeah. And I'm a bad swimmer. I'm a survival swimmer. Well, for me, I would have to say, I'd have to go shark. Shark would be bad. Like Ali, I was listening today, the alligator, a guy in Florida, and the alligator, he was fishing and bit his hand off or whatever. Like, I think that one, you can avoid that one, right? Maybe you can't, but don't put yourself in a bad spot. Shark, ooh, ouch. I guess that would probably be worse than being like swallowed whole like Jonah by a big whale, right? I mean, at least maybe that one.
Well, that's debatable because if you got swallowed whole, are you still alive inside and you realize what's going on and now you're helpless as opposed to just all of a sudden just it's done, it's over?
Yeah.
That might be a good worse one,
right?
And that's, that goes to the answer that I gave.
Yeah.
My answer was a snake that was big, like a snake that is big enough to eat you whole. Because then the stomach acid would be...
Oh, like you were like a little mouse, yeah. Like or like a hedgehog that it just and you can just see it moving down. It's like a Shel Silverstein poem right here, right? Whatever poem that is.
Yeah, then you're digested and then spit out, which sounds a lot worse of a way to die than just. But Ricky Ronnie said shark because you get bitten, but then you probably drown, which is even worse. So yeah, there's no right answer. So I think that's where we
No.
All right, Coach. Thank you so much for joining us. We took way too much of your time tonight, but we're really appreciated for all of it. I can't wait to see what is next for you at Old Dominion.
I appreciate it. Again, thank you guys. I mean, thank you to our fans, right? I've tried to say it every chance I get. We've got unbelievable fans, right, who support our players, our team, our program through thick and thin, and they proved it this year. And again, thank you to you guys, right? This is a labor of love for you. You do it because you love it. You do it because you love ODU. You do it because you love the programs, and you do it really well. And so thank you guys. This is great for our players. It's great for our fans. It's been enjoyable for me. It wasn't always fun. I didn't have a lot of different answers for you guys when we talk basketball, but again, this matters, right? This matters for our program, and I really appreciate it. So thank you guys.
Oh, you're very welcome, Coach. It's our pleasure. I know you kind of did it a little bit just right there, but do you have any parting words on the season for our fans? Not our fans, but Old Dominion basketball fans.
Yeah, no, I think the future is really bright, right? This is a great program that has a lot of great attributes, right? We've got great fans. We've got great facilities. I'm very confident that the program will bounce back very quickly. I'm excited about the new Mike Jones era. I think he's a great guy. I know he's a great leader. I've seen that in action. I've watched his teams play at the high school level for a very long time. We were fortunate to have one of his former players from DeMatha come play for us at American U. I'm very confident that Mike Jones is going to continue to run the program in the right way. And he cares passionately about ODU and ODU basketball. And so I think the future is very, very bright. So again, thank you to the fans for sticking with us. And I'm a believer that brighter days are very close by in the future in Chartway.
Absolutely, Coach. Thank you again. We appreciate you. And we're going to see you around campus real soon. Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.
Go Monarchs.